Well, welcome back to this episode of Don't Miss a Beat. I'm Dr. Steve Green from the Duke Clinical Research Institute, and I'm, of course, joined by my friend and colleague, Dr. Muthu Vaidyanathan from the Brigham and Women's Hospital. Well, today we have a very, very special guest. We have Dr. Darren McGuire, who needs no introduction, but he is a professor of medicine and a leading clinical trialist in the cardiometabolic space from the University of Texas Southwestern. And we're privileged to have Dr. McGuire with us today to discuss the hot off the press top line results of the SURPASS CVOT, which is a very unique cardiovascular outcome trial in that it was a GLP space trial, but it involved two incretin based therapies head to head, tirzepatide versus dulaglutide among patients with type 2 diabetes and ASCVD. And I think, as our audience knows, GLP-1 and incretin-based therapies are pretty much all over the place in the cardio-kidney metabolic clinical trial space. But for the most part, especially the large programs, have mostly been placebo-controlled. So this is a very unique experiment because we are testing two distinct molecules here, a pure GLP-1 receptor agonist, dulaglutide, versus a dual GLP-GIP agonist in tirzepatide. And, Darren, we're very privileged to have you here today, and congrats to you and the executive committee, the investigators, on the top line results that we were saying. But, again, why don't you just set the stage for us with what your opening thoughts are about this program and what it means?
Yeah, I think, this dates back a decade, having these discussions about when would we have to start doing active comparator controlled trials? In cardiology, the DOAC field is the perfect example where nobody would have accepted a placebo anticoagulant in the AFib space. And so, when you have an abundance of data about an effective therapy and you want to prove non-inferiority for a new one, and the new one needs to be easier to administer, cheaper, or better tolerated, right? Those are the qualifications for non-inferiority. We did one trial after another in the GLP-1 receptor agonist space in people with diabetes, and we ended up doing 8 trials over a decade reporting out with placebo control. Now, remember, we're not placebo controlling glucose management. We're placebo controlling the experimental agent. And so about 8 years ago or so, I gave a presentation at the American Diabetes Association suggesting in the presentation one of the ways we may need to step forward once we start having outcomes evidence is we're ultimately going to need to test the new therapies against proven effective therapies. And the executives of Eli Lilly approached me after that meeting, and we began to design the SURPASS CVOT trial. So the FDA has signed off on this novel concept, but just so the audience knows, what we've proposed is we're going to test against an active comparator, non-inferiority, but simultaneously test against an imputed placebo, which means we take the meta-analysis of the field and invert the upper confidence limit and set an upper confidence margin that if we get within, we can claim superiority against an imputed placebo, which would lead to a product label claim. And so this is both clinical science methodology and regulatory pressures all coming together. So the FDA signed off on this. We've now completed the trial. We all believe in it. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how you and Muthu and the clinical audience accepts these data. Because it is some statistical wizardry, right? We're using imputed placebo comparisons, but we've done that before in the anticoagulant space with the DOACs. So there is a precedent, and this has been done in oncology, and it's been done in device therapies for years. But I think this is the very first time cardiometabolic divisions at the FDA have accepted at least this as a concept.
So Darren, thank you again for joining us. And I want to pursue this concept of imputed placebo because it's likely new to many of the folks in the audience and our listeners. And imputed placebo, our understanding is that if we are comparing drug A versus drug B in an active control trial design, that if we borrow evidence from a comparison of drug B versus placebo, then we can infer the comparison of drug A versus placebo.
That's exactly right.
And so in order to accept that level of evidence, it seems like you're taking the totality of what we understand from the preceding CV outcomes trials of GLP-1 receptor agonists against placebo, using meta-analytic estimates to infer that latter comparison. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And in this case, it's a little more complicated because this is a dual agonist. So it's not exactly a GLP-1 receptor agonist, although we think probably much, if not most, of the effects we see with this compound is GLP-1 receptor based. We don't know the effect of the GIP agonism biologically or clinically. So there are several steps of faith that have been taken in the design of the trial and the negotiations with regulators, but both the FDA and the European Medicines Agency signed off on this, at least as a proposal they would consider for a claim of superiority against a placebo. And I think that's where we have to go. You know, we're doing all of these trials in the cardiometabolic space, SGLT2 inhibitors and SGLT1/2 inhibitors and GLP-1 and multiple incretin. You know, we're now testing triagonists. At some point, we need to compare against active comparators. And, you know, when we started this in 2008, when the regulators changed the rules about diabetes medicines, because there was not a single proven antihyperglycemic therapy to modify outcomes, we had to do placebo-controlled non-inferiority trials, which means we're doing 10 and 15, 16, 20,000 patient trials trying to prove that a drug is not worse than a placebo, which is off-putting to everybody. And so now we have proven effective therapies. We have a line drawn in the sand, and we need to make sure that the new therapies are at least as good as the proven therapies. And so this was the first time, you know, I've been involved in the design of many of these trials that we've done in the antihyperglycemic space. And for the past 10 years, I've encouraged sponsors to do active comparator trials, and this is the first time I succeeded that the company actually agreed to do this, and we did it, and we have a positive result. I mean, it's you know, even if you take out the imputed placebo, we have a non-inferiority trial proven statistically against dulaglutide, that tirzepatide is effective for cardiovascular risk mitigation, and whether it gets a claim. And the claim is important, really important, because it drives reimbursement. And so we're hoping that the clinicians and the regulators and the third-party payers will accept these data, that this drug should be placed at least in parallel with the other proven therapies.
Yeah, kudos to you and kudos to the sponsors as well for pursuing such a trial. We're not used to this. And I think, as you had mentioned, this is where the field really needs to go. And why Steve and I actually wanted to discuss this, you know, typically we don't react like this in to a press release. But this really has such unique design features and implications to the field that I think it deserves particular discussion. One of the pushbacks that we often get when discussing with sponsors is that an active control trial is going to simply require too many patients and too many events accrued to sufficiently power the trial. And so SURPASS is one of the largest trials in this therapeutic area, mm-hmm. and targeted one of the highest numbers of events of major adverse cardiovascular events. And and my understanding is the duration of the trial was also quite substantial. It was a fairly long exposure to the therapy. So can you talk a little bit about the size and the power of the trial?
Yeah, the patient exposure is critical. And the patient exposure, you know, the power is driven. You know, I always ask my trainees, what determines power of a trial? And they all say the sample size. And that's just not true.
It's the number of events accrued. And so to accrue the a number of events. So I'll just, without getting into the weeds, we had to generate a upper confidence margin less than 1.04. So that's an equivalency trial. And to get a confidence margin at that level of precision takes thousands of events. And to the credit of the sponsor, that's what we did. We did a huge trial with a long-term follow-up to accumulate enough events so that at the end of the day, we have precision of the estimate, both for non-inferiority comparison against dulaglutide, but also to support as strongly as we can, as robustly as we can, the analysis against imputed placebo.
Yeah, I mean, it's truly incredible. Over 13,000 patients, but as you mentioned also, I think it's over 4 years of follow-up. So again, huge number of events needed to get that level of precision for that non-inferiority estimate. So let's get to the meat and potatoes, Darren. You know, again, the press release is out. I think we were all like amazed and, you know, can't wait for the official presentation. But based on what's available publicly, you know, we know that it met the non-inferiority endpoint for MACE, the primary endpoint. But then he also gave us the teasers on, again, not adjusted for type 1 error, but the teasers of all-cause mortality benefit, eGFR slope, weight. But why don't you take us through those results as much as you can, at least?
Yeah, and so, you know, and what's in the public domain, we'll be presenting this before the end of the year. And of course, the manuscript is well along the way. Is we showed a point estimate of 0.92 against dulaglutide, so an 8% relative risk reduction. Upper confidence limit was 1.01, so almost got superiority against dulaglutide, but clearly demonstrated non-inferiority. So that's the top line result. That's the primary analysis of the trial. But there was also a 16% statistical reduction in all-cause mortality against dulaglutide. And as you know, in all these trials, we have hierarchical analyses. And so whether we will be able to claim statistical significance of that finding or not will be defined by the analysis plan. And I can't share that right now, but the company chose to put that in the press release. And what's also in the press release is there was superiority for hemoglobin A1C. Again, this is not a glucose control trial, so we're not targeting a contrast in A1C, but despite everybody being treated open label to the same glycemic targets, tirzepatide was superior versus dulaglutide and body weight reduction. We've seen with tirzepatide, it's probably the most potent agent available on the market, at least in the incretin modulators to modify body weight. And so those were expected findings. The A1C is maybe a little more surprising, the body weight, I think most of us expected. And then eGFR slope is favorably affected, which is also in the press release. Yeah. that's like a quaternary analysis that we're going to be presenting. But yeah, everything that's been publicly presented looks really favorable. And at the end of the day, if you don't buy the Kool-Aid that we're selling about imputed placebo analysis, we have a clear statistical non-inferiority finding against a proven active comparator with the added benefits of A1C and weight reduction that's superior to at least to dulaglutide. So, you know, we have also semaglutide and liraglutide are approved for cardiovascular risk reduction. We didn't test this drug against those. So no claims in the class that we can say this drug beats everything, but it certainly beat dulaglutide on the cardiometabolic biomarkers.
And can you speak a little bit more on that last note on comparators? So as we move forward in this field of incretin-based therapies, but obesity medicines in general, in cardio-kidney metabolic diseases, how does one select a comparator? What is most appropriate? And many may quibble about perhaps that dulaglutide is a less potent GLP-1 receptor agonist, and perhaps selecting other GLP-1 receptor agonists, especially at higher doses or higher dose equivalents, might have yielded different results than what you have observed so far with certain.
Yeah, and when you go to the word potency there, I think what you're meaning is the effect on weight,
yes,
right? And so dulaglutide, of the three that are approved GLP-1 receptor agonists for cardiovascular risk reduction, dulaglutide has the least effect on body weight, to your point. And, you know, semaglutide, even at the diabetes doses, are more favorable, and at the obese, the overweight approved doses are more potent. And so we don't have that comparison about, you know, so this is not an obesity trial. Let's just be clear about that. And as we were talking offline, and where the puck is going is, how long can we do placebo controlled trials of nutrient stimulated hormones, which is, I love that term, because I'm going to give credit to Anya Yastreboff at Yale, is, you know, as we're starting to target multiple pathways, not just incretin modulated pathways, but glucagon receptor pathways as well, and many other, leptin and protein YY. I mean, a lot of people are exploring lots of different pathways individually and in combination, targeting overweight and obesity. I think we're still in a place where ethically we can do placebo-controlled obesity overweight trials when we're targeting weight management and the cardiovascular implications of that. You know, as we, again, we're talking offline, recall that we did over, from 2008 to 2018, we did 8 randomized trials of GLP-1 receptor agonists against placebo. And that accumulation of the data led us ultimately to say, after 8 trials, can we do a 9th one with a placebo? But right now we have the SELECT trial in people without diabetes and ASCVD, showing that semaglutide at an overweight obesity dose improves cardiovascular outcomes. But that's one single trial in the space. So I think we're still in a space where we can do placebo-controlled trials of obesity. But because of the effectiveness and the tolerability of this class of medications, I don't think we'll have the tolerance to do 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 randomized placebo-controlled trials. I think we will pretty quickly jump to active comparator controls in the weight management domain.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Surmalis MMO will be that next placebo-controlled experiment in the obesity population. But I agree with you, Darren. I mean, after that, if that's positive, again, I don't think we're going to have the tolerance for, you know, 5 more trials of placebo control.
Yeah, and for the audience, just to remind you, Surmount MMO is very much like SELECT. So it's with tirzepatide against placebo in people without diabetes. Actually, Surmount, I think, allows diabetes, patients with diabetes in the trial, but it's an overweight obesity targeted population looking at cardiovascular outcomes that's going to be more similar to than different from SELECT. So if they have a positive finding from SURMOUNT, we're going to have to step back and really ask ourselves the gut check. Can we do placebo control still? But you know, when we're, many of the agonists now are targeting glucagon receptor pathways, and we don't have data on outcomes, even safety and tolerability for those in long term. So I think if we're doing triagonist or dual agonists that involve glucagon, I think we'll have more of an appetite to do a few more placebo-controlled trials to figure out what the glucagon agonism aspect of the modulation will affect from a cardiovascular, not just efficacy, but cardiovascular safety.
Yeah, very well said.
And that's exactly what I was contemplating as well. As we move forward, ideally, we have comparisons where we're able to isolate individual components that have perhaps unique biological properties. And this reminds me of the experience with, for instance, sacubitril valsartan, and their intense interest in isolating the properties and biological effects of sacubitril, the neprilysin. Right. However, in the design of those trials, again, those were active control trials, the FDA ultimately perhaps considered, but didn't officially introduce in the label, the imputed placebo analysis. So this is really, I think, will be very important for the field, because I think it'll define how we move forward, and what regulators have an appetite for, and ultimately how the clinical community will accept or will interpret these data, because this is certainly something unique in this field. So,
and we haven't even talked about, you know, another entire separate axis that's being explored is the amylin emetics, and you know they've been around for a long time as monotherapies, not very well taken up clinically, there are now GLP-1 receptor agonist amylin emetic combination therapies that are being developed. And again, yeah, I think it's really important that we rigorously study these in large-scale outcomes trials. And until we have one or two trials showing safety and tolerability, much less efficacy, I think the prevalence of this disease is so large that we really have to know what we're doing when we're using pharmacologic therapies to treat overweight and obesity.
And I think, as Mutu said too, I mean, this is active comparators are going to be the way of the future for so many different areas of CKM medicine. I mean, I even think of, you know, SGLT2 therapies now are becoming a comparator for a lot of combination therapies, kidney disease, and, you know, all the other heart failure prevention and whatnot. So again, this active comparator concept is something that we're going to have to get acquainted to in this area of medicine. And again, as Muthu said, we'll have to see what the regulators have an appetite for and what the journals have an appetite for. has an appetite for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you know, we haven't even talked about, you know, there are lots of the CKM field is so prolific right now. You know, we haven't even talked about finerenone. I mean, where do you figure out what's complementary, what's additive?
Yeah.
What can we afford societally and for the individual patients? So I tell you, it's a lot of job security. I got interested in this we called it, used to call it diabetes and cardiovascular disease back in 1996 when I started at Duke at the DCRI, I could only find five or six people in the whole world interested in writing about diabetes and heart disease. Now it's 30% of our heart meetings, and it's risen to a public health imperative where we just have to do the clinical trials and we have to be creative. We can't cut corners, but I think Surpass CVOT sets a new standard where we can do active comparative trials. And then one thing we haven't talked about is, as we're designing the next trials, open label extensions is like, to keep people in the trial to get the ultimate data that we need to give a carrot in front of the wagon and say, you know, look, you may be on a placebo for 3 years, but if you stay in the trial, we will provide open label therapy, which some people can't get. Some people can't afford. Some people just don't have access to some of these therapies. And so, again, methodologically, we're using creativity to do the trials as best as we can with the most rigorous analysis as we can get out of them.
Absolutely. Critically important. And, you know, there are other strategies that you and many trialists have employed, including different allocation ratios where more patients are going to be exposed to the active comparator or the non-placebo comparator. Additionally, really improving overall standards of care as a part of the trial. So really embedding nutritional support, lifestyle management support in both arms, and that might help keep patients in the trial, but in their allocated arms. So a lot to learn from, but thank you for this really pioneering work. We look forward to the official presentation publication later this year and learning more. And so thank you for joining us, and we'll wrap up this episode of Don't Miss a Beat. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and we thank our host, HCP Live, for all their work. Thank you once again.